Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. In a few moments, the news from Europe will be reported by our staff correspondents in Berlin and in London. Then Earl Godwin in Washington will tell us of latest developments at home. First to Germany. Go ahead, Berlin.
Hello, NBC. This is Theodor Knaut speaking from Berlin. It is a tremendous army that Germany is pouring into Bulgaria, and it is passing over a tremendous bridge built for the purpose. The greatest war bridge of all time, the Völkischer Beobachter calls it. Located at a spot where since the dawn of history, invading hordes have crossed the great river and inundated the countries to the south. 64 of the big freighters that ordinarily carry their burdens up and down the river form the foundation for the mile-long German bridge, and their superstructures in the pictures have the appearance of a continuous village lining the roadway over which tanks and cannon and trucks and all the appurtenances of war are proceeding, together with the indispensable infantry, happy to be on the move once more after the long months of inaction on the Romanian side of the river. Why all this immense army to occupy a country that is friendly anyway? And how far is it going? To the frontier of Greece or to that of Turkey? And what is to be its mission? All these are questions for the future to answer. We hear, however, that yesterday Germany's Ambassador von Papen presented a personal letter from Adolf Hitler to the Turkish president, who thanked him for the courtesy. But what the contents of the letter may have been is not divulged. The rumors persist that Yugoslavia is deep in consideration of whether to join the three-power pact and thus make it 100% for the Axis powers and Japan all the way to the frontiers of Greece and Turkey. To sum up, Germany has once more taken the initiative in this war, true to her policy of always striking first, and the DNB reports on the radio about the preparations that were being made by the British to invade the Balkans, plans which were forestalled by the new German move, it says. All sorts of evidence of British intentions have been collected, such as the remarks made by her minister to Sofia, Rendell, the visits of Anthony Eden to Ankara and Athens, rumored British moves in Syria, which is a stage on the road that leads from Egypt to the Balkans, all of which are said here to tend in the direction of a British attack on Germany via the Balkans. Official circles here profess to know nothing about a rumored visit of Prince Paul of Yugoslavia to Adolf Hitler to the Berghof, or about his presence on German soil. Neither is anything further said that bears on Foreign Minister von Ribbentrop's remark that further adherence to the three-power pact could be expected. But it is true that Romania's Antonescu is meeting Reichsmarshal Hermann Göring in Vienna today, and a communique is expected this afternoon. To come back to the Turks and the Hitler letter to their president, while nothing about its contents or whether it contained definite proposals is given out here, it is said that news of Turkish military measures, the word mobilization is not used here, came in before the letter was delivered. As to whether Germany's relations with Turkey have entered on a new phase, nothing is said in comment here. Nor is there further comment on the Russian declaration of yesterday as to her attitude toward the German entry into Bulgaria. President Roosevelt's recent address to Hollywood has brought out some acrimonious comment here, including an article in today's Völkischer Beobachter by Dr. Fritz Hippler, chief of the film department in the propaganda ministry. He takes particular exception to the American anti-German war films, and his opinion of American pictures is not a flattering one, which is perhaps not unconnected with the fact that such pictures as Snow White, Mr. Deeds Comes to Town, Good Earth, or Gone with the Wind have never been publicly shown in Germany. American movies were very popular here nevertheless, but now they are banned. And the loss, the German film leader says, is not great, for the American film is not really serious in purpose, its few good pictures, he claims, being rather in accordance with German ideals, and the general tendency being toward light entertainment. If good pictures were shown here nevertheless, it was at the risk of having the public misled into thinking that American film art really stood at a high artistic level. Anyhow, America began the film war by boycotting German pictures, and now the public here and in all countries under German influence is compelled to forego the chance to see American films. Germany is glad, says Dr. Hippler, that America thereby loses 40% of its foreign income on its films. British light naval forces yesterday attacked an island in northern Norway, where they took prisoner some German and Norwegian fishermen, and then retired before German countermeasures could be begun. That is the only news of interest in today's German communique. In Holland, a decree provides the appointment of administrative officials in cities and towns by the German commissioner, and this has been applied to Amsterdam, Hilversum, and Zaandam. This is Theodor Knaut speaking from Berlin and returning you to NBC.
That's the report from our German reporter this morning. We take you next to London.
This is John McVain in London. German bombers last night aimed their main attacks at the Cardiff area. Some fires were started, but many were put out before they could get underway, and the rest were brought under control before morning. A similar but not so severe raid is reported to have been made on another town. It is officially stated that German air activity was on a small scale and ended about midnight. A few bombs were dropped on the south coast and the Thames estuary. Today's communique says casualties were small. One German bomber is officially reported to have been shot down, but observers say another was brought down in the English Channel, and two more were thought to be in difficulties. London had one fairly short, uneventful raid alarm. It is understood in London that because of bad weather over the continent, British bombers didn't raid Germany last night. London has had one very short raid alarm today. The British Admiralty today announced that a naval raid was carried out successfully yesterday against German interests in the Lofoten Islands off the Norwegian coast. Further details, it is said, will be released as soon as reports reach London. It is understood in London that Britain has broken off diplomatic relations with Bulgaria. Full announcement of the fact will probably be delayed until reports from Mr. Randall, the British minister, have reached the British capital. The Turkish radio station at Ankara today asserted that the Bulgarian foreign minister, Mr. Popov, has resigned his post and Mr. Filov, the premier, has taken over control of foreign affairs. Yugoslavian circles in London have had no confirmation of the report that Prince Paul, the regent, is going to confer with Nazi leaders. These circles doubt that Prince Paul would accept such an invitation. With the entry of German troops into Bulgaria, Yugoslavia's position has become more difficult. The country is linked to Greece by the Balkan Entente, which provides for united action against another Balkan aggressor. 6 or 7 years ago, the Yugoslavs suggested that the pact be widened to include action against non-Balkan powers who tried to attack one of the members of the pact. But at that time, the idea is said to have been vetoed by the Greeks. The possibility that Yugoslavia will link herself with Greece against the coming attack by Germany seems very remote, as seen by Yugoslav observers here. But it's always possible that Mr. Eden has fixed up some sort of understanding between Turkey, Greece, and Yugoslavia that will stand the test of a German thrust toward Salonika. The plans of the Yugoslavian General Staff are said to have always allowed for an attack by Bulgaria, so that the presence of German troops in the country doesn't mean the Yugoslavs will have to defend a new frontier. But opposition to a Bulgarian attack and a German attack are two different things from the military point of view, and Yugoslavia's position is weaker than it was a month ago. The failure of the Russians to do anything more than mildly protest against the invasion of Bulgaria seems to have had some repercussions in Belgrade. And some Yugoslavs are saying, in effect, if Russia didn't dare to do anything against Germany, what can we hope to do? Military circles in London today told of one of those incredible exploits that seem to be everyday affairs when British and Italian forces meet. It seems that a section of between 20 and 30 British troops were sent out to establish a new headquarters in the Gelib region of East Africa. They came back from their expedition with 17 captured Italian officers, 40 non-commissioned officers, and 412 Italian African troops. London military quarters say the advance is continuing in Eritrea, but Karen hasn't yet fallen. Mopping up operations are proceeding in the Lake Turner area. Speaking of the taking of free French troops of the Italian oasis of Kufra, a free French military expert in London today quoted a book called Roman Peace in Libya, written several years ago by Marshal Graziani. In the book, Graziani speaks of his own occupation of Kufra as, quote, the greatest Sahara operation ever accomplished. The miraculous organization of the Italian conquest of Kufra, Graziani says, stupefied our neighbors, the English and the French. This is John McVain in London, returning you to the National Broadcasting Company in New York.
Now, here is Earl Godwin reporting from the NBC newsroom in Washington.
Good morning, folks. The tremendous effort in the United States Senate from now on will first center on that amendment by Senator Ellender of Louisiana, who proposes to write into the Least Lend Aid to Britain measure words which will say that there's nothing in this bill to authorize the president to send ships and other forces abroad. There seems to be a rising fear of another American expeditionary force, and that fear comes no doubt from the letters the mothers and fathers at home are sending their senators here in Washington. The administration, which has openly opposed any American expeditionary force abroad too, does not like the Ellender Amendment. The view of the administration is that the president will not send another AEF abroad, and that the Ellender Amendment is a sort of negative thing without power, except that it might give the Japanese the idea that we are growing soft. At the same time, there seems to be a disposition to accept an amendment limiting the number of American naval vessels that can be transferred to Britain. That is, the disposition seems to be acceptable to leaders on the Senate floor. The White House has not given any indication of yielding anywhere. The Ellender Amendment against sending men to Europe gained support from several Southern Democrats recently. Senator Byrd announced he would support it, while Senator Russell of Georgia was listed by Senator Ellender, who, as you know, is a Louisiana Democrat, as being for the amendment. Then Senator Lucas of Illinois says he's seriously considering a vote for it. Ellender rejected a proposed compromise that was offered him by Senator O'Mahony, a Wyoming Democrat, and that O'Mahony amendment would prohibit the transportation of lease lend goods by armed forces beyond American possessions. Mark that word, those words, because Ellender seems to think that that would be a sort of a tricky or at least a dangerous compromise, that it would permit American ships to take goods to Guam or somewhere else in the faraway Philippines from whence British ships could take the goods directly to the Orient. And says Senator Ellender, if war develops in the Far East, our ships then would be attacked. And, he went on to say, pointing at the map, if Iceland is in the Western Hemisphere, as many people think, our Navy could be used under the amendment to transport goods there for the British. And incidentally, I think that the official view of this government is that Iceland is in the Western Hemisphere. And in addition to these outspoken statements from senators, there's endless conversation among the administration's strategists, those who will have to administer the measure when it is enacted, and there seems to be very little doubt that it will be enacted. Today's story is that Harry Hopkins and a group of cabinet officers will be the president's chief aides on the administration of the Lend-Lease plan. These policymakers will decide such momentous questions as planes or ships for Britain, how many American planes, and how much can our defense be depleted for Britain, and how to get them there. And in fact, they must decide the question of aid short of war. Well, oddly enough, last fall, when the Lease Lend Bill or the Selective Service Bill was being debated, Congress was just simply went overboard for plenty of care for the boys who would be selected and drafted and put in military camps for a year's training. Right now, actually, there arises in Congress a sentiment against some of the entertainments and the hostesses and the dancing for the boys. Many a congressman has said to me, we sent our boys there to learn to fight, not to dance. And Earl Godwin says goodbye. That's the news from Washington at this time.
And that's the news at home and abroad. During the past quarter hour, we have heard from our reporters in Berlin and London and from Earl Godwin in Washington. This is the National Broadcasting Company.